Good morning, good day, or good evening, whenever and wherever you're listening. My name is Kevin Fukunaga, and you've joined the Scripts and Scribes Social. Many of us are social distancing ourselves, so this is our opportunity to hear from other writers who are going through the same experience. So let's all be quarantine companions together. I'm talking with a staff writer of Fast and Furious Spy Racers for DreamWorks. She's also a Sundance Institute Fellow in 2018 and was valedictorian of UCLA's Film School Class of 2017. She is Captain M. Dud, a.k.a. Emma Dudley. Hey, Emma, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be here.
I love that you introduced me
as Captain M. Dud.
Well, that's the reason that we actually initially connected. I saw a tweet somewhere along the lines, and someone must have retweeted you, or I don't know how it ended up on my timeline, but it was funny. And if you don't follow Emma, you should on Twitter. She's very, very funny. And it was your handle is at Captain M. Dud, which I thought was the greatest name ever. And I told you that. And ever since then, we've been sort of Twitter buds. So, yeah, so of course, you'll always be Captain M. Dud to me.
Thank you so much. In high school, I was just an awkward, anxious wreck. And a lot of people would make fun of my last name, and this one like really popular guy who I think I was in love with at the time, just started yelling like Captain M. Dud in the halls. And it made me want to die so desperately, that I decided to like take it back. Just reclaim it, for my own purposes. So that's my Twitter handle story.
No, that's awesome. So definitely follow at Captain M. Dud, E-M-D-U-D. Captain is obviously, you know, Captain. So yeah, thanks for coming on. It's great to finally chat with you off of the Twitter platform. I mean, you know, we trade tweets and all that kind of stuff, but no, it's great to finally chat with you. I want to say in person, but obviously due to the, coronavirus, we're not really in person, but as close as we can get for now. Yeah. So it's great to have you on. What's going on?
It's so great to be here.
What's going on in your world?
Well, just social distancing, I would say. The toilet paper is holding fairly strong.
Yeah.
So not panicking about that yet. But yeah, I have been eating a lot of kind of Valentine's Day candy that I purchased on sale before all of this went down. So I really just caught it at just the right time. And yeah, just writing a lot. Going for long, kind of anxious walks, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, that's been my life.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're working on now, Fast and Furious Spy Racers. Because you initially started as an assistant on there, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know what exact role, writer's PA, writer's assistant, showrunner's assistant, coordinator. And then you actually transitioned, you got onto a staff. So now you're a staff writer. How did that happen? How did that work for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So my title was script coordinator, but it's an animated show, and often a lot of the roles are kind of like blended. So I was kind of like showrunner's assistant, writer's assistant, script coordinator, all in one, I guess. And yeah, let's see, I started out just really learning as much as possible, listening. It was the very first show that I was support staff on, other than a brief kind of costume stint on a live action show. And so I was just trying to soak it all up. I think like the key to my ultimate promotion was the fact that I kept writing every morning and night while I was the assistant. I think gradually like working on my own craft and getting my writing skills to where they needed to be was totally instrumental in that process. And it also meant that I had just like content to show the writers on the show and my bosses, you know, when it was appropriate, I guess, or when they showed interest in it. So I think that was really important. Just like keep writing if you're an assistant, it's the key. And then you mentioned that I was a Sundance Fellow, and I think that was really like, if I were to pinpoint a specific kind of like turn in my assistant career. I do think it was getting accepted into that screenwriting lab with this this feature, this dramedy feature I've written that's like really personal. And yeah, at that point, you know, I had to go to our showrunner and ask, hey, can I take a couple days off to go to a Sundance lab? And he was nice enough to say yes, obviously, because I got to go. He's like the best guy ever. And then it, you know, became like, oh, well, can I like read the script that got accepted? I think it just kind of solidified like, oh, this girl isn't just an assistant. Like she's a writer herself in her own right. And that led, that experience of going through the lab led to me signing with my first manager. And I think just that inertia ultimately led to me getting my first freelance on the show, which, you know, I really had to make sure I knocked out of the park, but I was really supported through that process. And it just like couldn't have gone any better for me. I was really fortunate. And then I did another freelance on my own, and then wrote one with the showrunner, actually, which was, again, like one of the best experiences I've had in the business. And just by kind of doing a good job on those and kind of growing in my role and doing a little bit of two jobs at once, right? Like being all those assistant roles and writing episodes, I was kind of able to prove that I could do it and ultimately got staffed. So that was kind of my trajectory.
What sample did you use to get your first episode on Fast and Furious, or was it your Sundance script? Was there anything else that he read that like, okay, you know, I think you could write for the show?
Well, I was, yeah. So when I first applied to the script coordinator job, they did ask for a writing sample.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that's, it's often a good sign if they ask for a writing sample, cause you know, they're interested in you as a writer. I think that's actually very common. Like I have friends who have applied as like writers TAs and still are asked to show a sample, but for writer's assistants, certainly like when mm-hmm. I was looking for my replacement, I was definitely like reading a ton of samples and everything. So that was really kind of instrumental to me getting hired, because I didn't have previous writer's assistant experience. And that sample, so it was the pilot I graduated from UCLA with that I was really proud of at the time and excited to share with anyone who would read it. And now, of course, I look back at that script and I'm like, oh God, like I wouldn't show it to anyone, but because I've gotten better, luckily. But it was about this kind of Kimmy Schmidt-esque character who accidentally got sent to this school for troubled girls, like this kind of very dark, like boarding school mm-hmm. On the East Coast, and has kind of like a difficult relationship with her mom that feeds into it. And her mom, it turns out, like went to the same school, and you kind of figure out over the course of the pilot that this girl seems really bubbly and kind of like keeps everything positive, but she has this like very dark kind of like unexplored side of her. And it's kind of based off of me, and like, I try to be kind of positive and bubbly, like I think a lot of comedy writers do, but I think everyone kind of, anyone who's like crazy enough to work in this business has kind of like a little bit of an insane side. that's like a hot take maybe. That doesn't mean people aren't delightful, but I do think you have to be like slightly off your rocker. So it was about that, and it wound up resonating with a lot of people. And I guess the showrunner liked it enough to give me a chance. But even though it wasn't like there wasn't like racing in it, like Fast and Furious type of stuff, it was, Spy Racers is really like also a comedy. And so I guess it had kind of, it had the jokes, or showed that I could write jokes in a way that appealed enough to him.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find out about the opening on Fast and Furious as the coordinator, or you said you've applied as a coordinator, not as a writer's assistant. I don't recall exactly
no,
when
as
you
script
applied.
Coordinator.
Okay, so script coordinator. How did you find out about that job? Because I know a lot of newer writers are actually looking for opportunities like that. I know those jobs are incredibly hard to come by. And it's usually you hear from a friend who from a friend from a friend. It's not like it's advertised on Craigslist. So how did you find out about it?
Totally. I mean, this is I feel like this is another example of a friend of a friend of a friend that people are going to hate, because that really is the way it works. So I was working costumes on the second season of 13 Reasons Why. I was actually up in the Bay Area where they shoot, which is where I'm from. And I was like kind of starting to freak out, because I was like, okay, I got my first job in the industry. But I already knew I wanted to write. The writers were down in LA. And while I like absolutely loved everyone I was working with and getting a ton of great experience, I was just really anxious about, you know, I had gone to school in Los Angeles and then moved out of Los Angeles for my first entertainment job. And I was like, how am I going to get back and like hear about opportunities when I'm not in the same part of the state? So I was kind of losing it. And then one day, as I was driving home, from the costume job, my dad called me. And my dad works at this kind of education curriculum development. I believe it's a nonprofit, but don't quote me on that, at the time in San Francisco. And he was like, hey, I heard about a writer's assistant job. And I think I actually laughed. And I was like, Dad, like, no, you didn't. Like, stop messing with me. Like, I went to UCLA film school and interned for like 4 years straight. Like, if you are hearing about a writer's assistant position, something is wrong in the world. And, because I figured I would be hearing about it first. But he was like, no, I think it's a thing. And he sent me this Facebook post that his coworker had seen from a woman that she went to college with, saying like, hey, my boyfriend is looking for a script coordinator, preferably someone who recently graduated, like needs a writing sample, DM me if you know of anyone. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this does look kind of real. So I literally like went through my dad's coworker, submitted that that half hour and my resume and everything, didn't hear anything for a month. So I was like, well, it's, you know, they didn't respond or didn't even get it or whatever. And then, you know, came up with the courage to follow up with my dad's coworker and was like, hey, did you ever hear anything? I'm sure it's already filled. But she's like, no, let me check in. And then I got a response back from her that, you know, the girlfriend of the showrunner was saying that the showrunner really liked my script and they were going to be sending interviews soon. And then I got a first round, interview. Well, it was really like the most important round, with, the showrunner and the line producer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Skype interview, because I was obviously in costumes in the Bay Area. And I didn't even hear at that time, they weren't like announcing what the show even was. So going in, I didn't know what the show was. So I couldn't really prepare to the best of my ability. I knew the names and looked up what else they had worked on. So I could kind of speak to that and give them props and everything. Cause I genuinely did like the animated shows they had worked on previously. But yeah, I remember the showrunner being like, so we're doing like Fast and Furious. Are you a fan of the franchise? And I had seen zero Fast and Furious movies by that point. And this like isn't news. Like I've told him the story since, but I remembered, and this is so embarrassing, but I like listen to G-Eazy sometimes, like sorry about it. And he did the theme song for the 8th movie. And somehow my brain flashed to like this still from Fast 8, the cover art for this like terrible G-Eazy song that I love. And I was like, yeah, like love Fast and Furious. Oh my God. Like that G-Eazy song is such a banger. Right. And he was like, wow, seems like you really know the franchise. And I was like, 100%. Like, so basically it was a long con. And then I interviewed with the execs, the development execs covering the show next. And then within like about 24 hours, they were like, hey, can you start on Monday? And I had to move my ass back down to Los Angeles and watched all the Fast and Furious movies at a coffee bean because my Wi-Fi wasn't set up over the course of about like 15 hours. So, so humble beginnings, I would say.
So
just
you
watch every major franchise in case something happens to you, I guess, is my main advice.
Or at least know one singer from the soundtrack, at least, so you have something to
yes, the one like yeah. white rapper from the soundtrack,
right? So when you're up there on stage winning an Emmy or an Oscar or whatever it happens to be, you can thank G-Eazy.
I will absolutely be thanking G-Eazy, and hopefully he will be my date by that point.
We were talking before we started, before we came on, about your job as a costumes assistant on 13 Reasons Why, and how it actually helped you as a writer in terms of gave you insights into the process. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I thought that was interesting.
Yes, 1,000%. So I was a costume office PA, which that job, you're basically in the costume office, and I was tracking all the purchases that were made, clothes that were being bought, even like accessories and shoes and stuff, and then making sure that we were not like blowing our budget. I mean, that was my boss's job ultimately, but I had all the spreadsheets of like what it had been spent, and kind of preparing purchase card reports and like transactions and everything. I just spent an entire summer like yelling at people to give me their receipts. Not yelling, I was very respectful and professional, but at times my voice was raised.
Internally, you were shouting, and, right?
I was screaming. Yeah. But you know what? I get it. Like, receipts, like, are annoying, and I completely understand. So yeah, in terms of like helping with my writing, I just think a lot of times you'll write like a line, like I think the example I gave you was like they go to a club, and in your mind it's like, oh, cool new setting for people to interact in, and then in all the costumer's mind, if it were to go into production, it's like, oh my god, I have to dress an entire club of people like in club apparel, like that's not in the budget. Like, it just, it very quickly like becomes hours of work and like thousands of dollars. And I guess kind of.
And that's before the exec. And that's before the exec goes, hey, can we make that a costume party? Right.
Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly. So things can change really fast in production. Like, new scripts can be coming out. I remember my boss harassing the script coordinator for the latest script, and then being the script coordinator, I remember other departments harassing me, and I just had a better sense of like, oh, I understand why they need this.
Right.
Not that, you know, I'm finishing proofing it and everything, but you get a better sense of like the urgency of like everything that goes into making a show, and why everyone needs to know what's happening as soon as possible. And I guess I, you know, transitioning from a live action show in production to animation, at first I was like, oh, well, I think I made a joke in my interview. I was like, I guess we don't really have to worry about like the characters changing clothes, right? Because usually in animation, people generally like wear the same things. Mm-hmm. But it's super interesting because Spy Racers is a CG show, like 3D.
Right.
And a lot of the kind of production constraints are really similar because you know, like designers and animators and modelers, I'm not using the right term, sorry guys, but they're literally like modeling and building sets and characters and clothes and variations, and there are the same kind of like financial constraints on how many new characters you can have, new like voice actors and locations and everything. So I guess I was just really kind of surprised because I was so naive about the overlap between animation and live action. And I would also say that the same is true for like 2D. Like, you only get so many backgrounds. Like, in every entertainment production, there are constraints that are annoying, but also kind of cause creative solutions.
Right. And how did you, what was your Sundance experience like? Because you had, you know, obviously been a Sundance Institute fellow. Congratulations. What was that like?
Thanks. Oh, it was amazing. It was this really kind of like personal script that I had actually written my last year at UCLA. My professor had really encouraged me to write it. And at the time, I thought I just wanted to be a comedy writer. And that's mainly where I've worked since. But I really think kind of like not being afraid to explore my dramatic side really paid off and allowed me to like get into more depth and just have that script be like good enough, obviously, to get into the lab and get me attention in a lot of ways. And the lab experience was super cool. So I did the Sundance Screenwriting Intensive, which is a two-day program here in Los Angeles. And the first day, it's funny because, you know, you get accepted into the lab and everyone's like, oh my God, can I read the script? Like, it must be so good. And it is, right? Like, it has to be good to get in. But then you get there and it's like, okay, so this lab is about making it better. And everyone's like, oh, I thought it was good. so it was kind of a, it was just like interesting to change gears, but you do realize like, oh my gosh, this can be so much better. Like, they saw its potential and now it's time to really put in the work to take it to the next level. And so the first day was literally like pen to paper. We were led in these writing exercises to kind of like explore the different characters and kind of get down to their heart. And we would write like character bios and just have little prompts for like, how would this relationship evolve in this scenario? And then we got to, they screened this movie that this writer director had recently taken to the actual Sundance Festival. And he had started with the script in, I think, the exact same lab that we were doing at the time, or maybe a different one. But he was just able to speak to his experience of like taking it from the lab to actually, you know, producing it and then taking it to the festival, which was just so inspiring and interesting to hear what that development process was like for him. And then the second day, I feel like was a little bit my favorite. I mean, it's hard to choose, right? But we were paired up with two individual mentors each, mm-hmm. who had read the script and like come up with notes in detail for us. And it was just so exciting to talk to someone who was doing exactly what I wanted to be doing. Like, both of them had written and directed their own films, and having them give me feedback that was so, I mean, they both just understood the script so well, like in ways that I didn't understand it myself, which was really cool. And I think the biggest thing I took out of that experience, just script wise, was they really challenged me to like make the ending of the story more nuanced, because it was kind of like craving that, but I hadn't quite accepted that yet. And I was just used to kind of typical like happy endings. And so it was just so empowering to get those notes and realize that it could be something I hadn't considered yet. And then after the actual experience of the lab, I stayed in touch with the actual like kind of institute's people, and they gave me notes on a couple more rounds of the script. And now, like, fingers crossed, things are happening with that script that I'm really excited about. So we'll see. But it was such a cool experience. I can't recommend it enough. And people have asked me like what it takes to get into those programs. And I really just think like writing like the most personal story you possibly can will put you so far ahead of the other submissions, because there's this certain like magic that comes from writing about something that only you could write about, that isn't like, you can't count it or like quantitate it in any way, but it shines through in such a special way. So that's what I would recommend, I guess.
Right. And you had mentioned that being a Sundance Fellow and your script for that had somehow helped you land representation. So is it something that Sundance helped you in that search, or did you just query, or how did that work for you?
Yeah, so I had already kind of been like talking to assistants / coordinators / on their way to becoming junior managers at a couple of different companies. And the way that came about was I interned a lot in college, and a lot of those internships were kind of like covering desks and filling in for assistants, or even I kind of like was an assistant / intern at a couple places. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of made a note about the companies that the execs whose desks I was covering communicated with a lot, and just like seemed to be actively meeting with and like sending through material that I was excited about and everything. And then I made an effort to, you know, when my internship was ending and I had sent a lot of scheduling emails back and forth with these assistants. I would ask like, hey, would you ever be up for getting coffee? And at that point I really wasn't, you know, I was still in college, right? And I was aware that it was early days, but when I finally met with them, I didn't try to make it a secret that I was trying to write. And I would kind of tell them about some of the stuff I was working on, and a couple of people asked to read. So it was kind of like, I mean, it was just networking, right? Like they knew I was writing and already working on stuff. And then I think the Sundance thing kind of just like solidified their interest in me because I had this stamp of approval from this program and everything.
Right.
And so I was able to actually like officially sign with someone.
Right. And I think that both your work as an intern and as a costumes assistant, which a lot of writers wouldn't associate with representation and getting a job as a writer's assistant or script coordinator on a show, really goes to show that networking is huge. And if you're able to, taking a job, any job in the industry somewhere can and often does help and lead to getting closer to your goal of being on staff. Because I think a lot of people write it off as like, I'm a writer, I'm not going to do that, or I'm not, some of them may not be able to, which I understand if they're out of state and it becomes difficult, but it really does behoove you if you're able to explore those opportunities. Like being a costumes assistant in the Bay Area on a drama show leading to a staff writer job on, you know, an animated comedy is just not something that most people would put together necessarily. So.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. I think you make such a great point. Like, and I, as I mentioned, like I was freaking out myself. I was like, how, did I make the wrong decision by leaving LA? But I just really, I took as best advantage as I could while I was there. I wrote a 13 Reasons Why spec while I was in costumes because, you know, I got to read
because
all
you're smart
and everything. I was trying to be, and then my boss read it and yeah, I just really felt like I was taking, and I never stopped writing. Like every evening I would go home because I felt like I wasn't where I wanted to be. It like really fueled my kind of own like creative development. And just to speak to anyone who might not feel like they're where they need to be or can't quite connect the dots in their own mind. Like I found out, you know, several months into the Fast and Furious script coordinating gig that, you know, part of the reason I was appealing as a candidate was number one, my script, which is something you can control no matter what day job you're working. Like just make sure you have awesome samples. But also the fact that I had worked in costumes, and I think the people who were hiring me were like, oh my gosh, she can survive in costumes. Like that's a really difficult job. Like I'm sure she would kick ass for us and work her butt off, which was 1000% true. So I think it's about just having a really good attitude no matter where you are. And I honestly think like working in costumes and like staying positive really like set me up for being a good staff writer, where your job is also to be like really excited and positive. Like your job is not to like direct the entire show and make big decisions. It's to like kind of be a cheerleader, like do a first pass at everything to the best of your ability and make it really good and then hand it off to your superiors. But I think the kind of like connective tissue is just being excited to like learn and support others. And I just think that I'm so glad that I got that experience in the form of working in costumes.
Yeah. And I think also just working on a show or film, working in production, period, in any department, I think is helpful because you see all the different branches of the show, all the different areas, all the different departments of the show. And you might not necessarily have firsthand experience in working with transpo, but you've probably associated with transpo working in costumes and working, again, all the different departments,
yeah,
how they're interconnected. And one person's writing, you know, when you're writing or whatever, affects all the other departments. And I think
totally.
That's important
Absolutely.
To understand, you know?
1000%.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about writing, and now I want to jump to another topic, a topic that has been sort of burning in my mind since we originally talked about it, probably a couple weeks ago. In all of this self-quarantine, social distancing, people have sort of, some people have panicked and hoarded toilet paper, and somehow it came up that your boyfriend does not use toilet paper. And without me elaborating and explaining the whole situation, because it's not necessarily as strange as it sounds, although it's slightly strange, which I want to, it's not strange, it's different. I wanted to get your, I want to get the whole story from you. Why does your boyfriend not use toilet paper? Please elaborate.
Well, so I want to clarify, like, there may be some toilet paper usage that, like, I don't directly know about. I'm not explaining this well, but no, so my boyfriend is half Iranian, and in Iran, as in a lot of different countries, they have like a different process. It's more of like a bidet situation, where they like literally like wash instead of using toilet paper. And this has been an ongoing debate, I would say, in our household about like which one is more clean, I guess. And I would say, like, kind of like in the moment, I feel that toilet paper is more clean, but long term, I do see the arguments for washing. So it's just been interesting, like, kind of learning about this like different approach and like kind of cultural differences, but it's kind of it's manifested itself in this super funny kind of perspective from him about how everyone is freaking out and hoarding toilet paper when he's just like, first of all, like, what are you doing? Like, you don't need that much. And also just kind of, yeah, it's like a cultural like difference of opinion that I think is very compelling. And depending on what happens, I may be adopting it as well in a time of need. So yeah, it's just funny. His favorite topic is talking about how everyone's crazy and it's unnecessary.
Well, elaborating on that, I had mentioned, oh, so when you had mentioned he didn't use toilet paper, and I had said, oh, so it's like a bidet situation, and you said, but that's not, it's a watering can, which I thought was interesting, and it led to a whole different wormhole of questions that we were not able to rectify, which is fine, but
Well, yeah, like I know that there's a water. This is where like my insight kind of peters out because I've never been a true witness to the full process as I shouldn't be. I mean, I wouldn't want to
Sure.
be.
However,
So yeah,
explanations could be in order, maybe just even for
it
casual conversation, you know?
Well, no, like I basically understand how it works. Like
Yeah.
there's you use the watering can to get the water where it needs to be and then kind of go from there. So it's not mechanized, it's kind of
Right.
by hand,
Yeah.
literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I knew more.
I just
Oh
wanted to
gosh.
touch base on hopefully he's not gonna be
Your
mad.
listeners are gonna be so disappointed.
No,
And
not at
I don't
all.
know.
I mean, culturally, and honestly, I think that bidets probably are cleaner. It's just most people in this country don't have
I
them.
think so.
Yeah, although that could be
Yeah, I mean,
changing.
I would love one.
Yeah, I mean, people on Twitter seem to be hyped up about, because they do sell those on Amazon for like 30 or 40 bucks. You can actually buy a little toilet seat that has a little sprayer thing. You just attach it to the water pipe coming from going into your toilet. It just goes there, and so you can actually get one, and
Oh,
it's not that
no
expensive.
way.
Yeah, you just install it yourself. Seems fairly easy. So that may be the new thing. That may be the new, what are those things called? Not the hot pot. What are those things?
Crock pot?
No, there's those instant pots, the real super, or the weighted
Yeah.
blankets. It might be the new weighted
Oh, I
blanket
know.
or instant pot, the new do-it-yourself bidets. So,
I hope so. I mean, in that case, I feel like we're trendsetters. Not me, my boyfriend, but
right. You can claim it since he's your boyfriend. You can claim part ownership of that. But yeah, that might be the new
yeah.
trend after this whole coronavirus, toilet paper apocalypse kind of thing.
I know. I feel that the world is going to be forever changed.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be mad about it changing in that way. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So how are you keeping yourself busy, creative, happy in this time? What kind of activities do you do?
Yeah. So I still, I'm definitely writing every day, new, like, original material for myself. My rule for myself is 2 pages of new original material every day. That doesn't sound like that much, but over time it definitely adds up in a way that makes me happy and is effective, I guess. Mm-hmm. Some days it's more than that, right? Where I just get going and keep going, and then other days it's like, oh my God, I made it to 2 pages. Thank God.
Right.
It's over. And but yeah, so I'm still doing that. I think kind of keeping to that has been a good way to maintain a routine and kind of sort of sense of normalcy. And I actually kind of find that I have more time for it now. I guess my commute was longer than I ever realized. And I really make a point of trying to do kind of networking drinks and coffees as much as possible. And so I think now that those have been relegated more to the shorter calls and everything, it just leaves me with more time. So I actually feel like I'm kind of going through a creative renaissance in a way. I don't know. I'm like being pretty productive, even though obviously I'm pretty anxious, but I'm always anxious. So I don't know. I think the world has just caught up to me in a way.
Well, now you have a reason to be anxious, right?
Exactly. Which is actually what I've been craving. So now I feel, I don't feel as alone now I'm just revealing too much about my psyche, but,
no.
But yeah, so I guess, I'm doing pretty well. Part of my like creative process is going on a lot of like runs. I find that it helps kind of clear my mind and is kind of the only way to get my brain to stop thinking about creative solutions and ultimately like discover them unconsciously, if that makes any sense, by just giving myself a break. So I've still been running a lot. And I've actually been very excited because I think more people are maybe taking walks or maybe I'm out at the same time as them more. And so I'm getting to see a lot more dogs, which I freaking adore.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just kind of, I might impulse adopt a dog. Probably not. My boyfriend would be very upset, but I'm getting closer, I would say. I don't know, like our apartment, we live with a lot of other people and I don't know. I just don't know if I could give it its best life back when I'm back to work and everything.
Oh, I see.
But yeah. I aspire to get a dog, certainly.
Yeah.
I would love one.
Yeah. So when you're out and about running through the city, do people give you that 6 feet of space? My wife took our son for a walk just around the neighborhood and said, I guess they had stopped because my son is 6, but he loves bugs and creatures. And I guess was looking in the grass for something. And there was another guy following pretty close behind them. And she kind of glanced over her shoulder. And as the man passed, he had on a mask and like goggles and gloves and stuff, but he just like scurried right past them really quickly. People are, working on keeping social distance. So I'm just curious as to how it looks in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm usually, if I'm running, I'm like moving at a higher rate.
A pretty
of speed,
brisk
I guess.
Pace,
so I
sure.
like to, yeah, but I like to make sure I'm not like getting in people's space or making them uncomfortable. So I'll often kind of veer out, into the street a little bit just to make sure I'm being respectful, which is like probably unnecessary. But yeah, I've kind of been trying to do that, but I just feel like maybe my understanding of the virus is not great, but it would really have to jump quickly, just passing someone. I don't know. That's my hot take.
Yeah. I don't know all the the details of the level of exposure that one person would have, from someone that was infected versus someone running past. And I don't know how that would work.
Yeah. I do think need to, like, I guess sneeze or cough or something, because it's not just by air. That's another thing. I probably should have explained this. Me giving people space, like, I often get, like, kind of a runny nose, like, running because it's a little bit cold out. And so I'm worried that people just think I'm, like, this, like, kind of infection barreling towards them. So I try to give them space as I, like, snort. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess fortunately for anyone who knows the actual virus symptoms, I don't believe a runny nose is one of them. I think it's a dry cough, fever, you know, headache, things like that. So I don't think runny nose really, it just, you know, means you need a Kleenex, I think. Yeah, I don't think runny nose is actually one of the symptoms. I could be wrong, but from what I remember hearing.
No, I
times,
think that's right. Yeah. So I'm just woefully ill-informed and just running around like a snotty disaster, I guess.
Your typhoid Mary sneezing on people as you run by.
I know.
So what else are you doing when you're home, not running, to maintain, and you're not being super productive, which is awesome that you're doing that. But when you're not being super productive, are you watching TV? You got movies, book recommendations, that kind of stuff?
Well, I've been watching a lot of reality TV, I must admit. I just finished Love is Blind last night, which has been a true joy.
I've never seen it.
I guess. Highly recommend. I mean, it's just it's trash, but I find, like, sometimes, you know, when I've spent a whole day of writing, watching narrative TV, like, can sometimes stress me out because I'm trying to analyze it, and, like, I don't know, it sometimes feels like work to me, or continued work, if I'm not in the right headspace. So I gravitate towards reality television a lot. So I need to find a new show now. I'm also rewatching The Office, like, for the millionth time.
Sure.
It's just perfect, I guess. Jim and Pam just got married again.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think what... I just finished a book that I really loved. It's called This Is How It Always Is, and it's about... I would describe the tone as kind of like dramedy. Like, it has really like funny moments, and it's about this family who, I think it's a family of like four boys, like male kids, but then the youngest, starts to want to dress as a girl, and kind of, it's about exploring that child's like gender identity in the context of like a larger family and obviously like society around them. And I just really loved it because I was like a kind of a diehard tomboy for much of my childhood, like age, like, I don't know, 8 to 14, where I literally like looked like a boy, loved boy type things, and was kind of teased for it, even in the Bay Area, I guess. I just think it's like such an interesting look at what that's like. And I loved it. So highly recommend that book.
And what's it called? This Is How It Always Is?
Yeah, okay. That's it.
And what sort of boy things were you interested in? Example.
Well, I love sports.
Oh, cool.
All sports. I wanted to play in the NBA, which was an unrealistic goal on many levels, I would say.
For most people, right? Just in general.
Yeah, totally. Somehow, like, being a woman was probably low on the list of reasons why it was never going to happen for me.
Yeah, I mean, if you were 7 feet, maybe you would.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's funny. As a dumb, like, 8-year-old, I was like, oh, well, boys men are biologically, like, stronger and faster and everything, so I want to be a boy so I can be a better athlete, and from a feminist perspective that is very problematic. But I was also just like horrified by the concept of like puberty and everything, and didn't want things to change, and yeah, it was just kind of like a tough and confusing time for me in a lot of ways. I think I got along somewhat better with the boys in my class too at that point. So yeah, it was a real mix of things, but it has led me, like, in a lot of my kind of original material now, I talk a lot or explore like gender expression. Like my favorite pilot that I have is that's gotten the most traction is about drag kings, because I think it's so interesting, like the kind of inequality that even exists in like drag right now. Like drag queens are very, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race and everything, like they're very visible.
Sure.
Whereas like I think drag kings are a little less well known, and I think that's fascinating, and I kind of tried to tackle it. So yeah, that childhood experience is another example of something like personal that I've tried to really include in my writing.
Well, I mean, to be honest, the term drag king, this is, you're telling me this right now, it's the first time I've ever heard that term used.
See?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So now I'm
but it's
I'm
a real like
educated.
Check them out, because it's just a really cool community and culture and everything. I'm fascinated by it.
So I'm assuming it's the reverse, as opposed to, you know, men transitioning to women. It's the other way around, right?
Yeah, it's like women performing
as
men.
Right. Cool.
And yeah, it's funny because I think in a lot of ways, like, you know, dressing as a woman lends itself to, you know, you can have the big hair and just like there's a lot of kind of aspects of femininity that are very performative, like
sure.
whether you're calling it a performance or not.
Right.
And so it's really interesting to me to see how like drag kings approach that. Like I've seen some of them do like rhinestone beards, which I think is awesome. And I don't know, I feel like it's as a movement, like kind of more in its infancy. But it's like, I feel like it's going to get much bigger and more well-known. So it's something I'm really excited about.
So are there shows, like performance shows? Like,
yeah,
you know,
there
they,
are.
Like a Rat Pack version kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get the sense that they perform like, and again, I'm not the most like educated about it, to be honest. Like, I think there are other people who know that world better, but
sure.
My understanding is that it's kind of more like individual shows. Like I spoke to one king who performs as part of a larger kind of like burlesque show, and kind of has her own like solo spot in that. I guess his own, I'm sorry, I messed up the pronoun, but yeah, so it's less of like a kind of group performance, but there's probably a wide range that I don't know about.
Okay. No, I mean, yeah, this is the first it makes sense, and I would have assumed there was, you know, that culture going on, but yeah, this is the first time I'd heard the term. So yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Any other film, TV, book recommendations you have for those who may be hungering for new, fresh content to keep them entertained during this time?
I also read that memoir called Educated by Tara Westover, which I think was really popular, or maybe came out like a year ago, but I think that one's awesome. Middlesex is another one that I recently read, which is similarly gender bending.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I feel like I haven't kept up with, I really need to watch more movies. Oh, I just watched Clue from the, I think like 1980s, I want to say. I might be wrong about that, but I really enjoyed that. thought it was really funny and like a cool whodunit and everything. Yeah, I guess those are my current recommendations.
Cool. And there was that, it's not really a meme, but going around you know, Shakespeare during, I don't know, what is the play, came up, wrote King Lear. What are you hoping to have accomplished or written during this quarantine when it all is said and done? You're going to walk out with...
I'm writing this new spec feature that's kind of, it's based on a comedic experience I had at my dad's wedding this past summer. That's kind of like the kernel that became a larger kind of father-daughter wedding movie, not them getting married, obviously. But, the dad getting married. And I just finished the first draft of that and sent it to my agent a couple of days ago. So my hope is to also share it with my writing group and get like a solid draft of it done that I can share with people after this is over.
Very cool. Very cool. And
that is my King Lear.
That's your King Lear? Nice. A comedy about your parents, your dad's wedding?
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
I guess, lastly, what sort of message do you have for those other writers out there who may be, you know, feeling a little isolated or anxious, as many people feel during this time? Do you have words of encouragement or, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've just talked about how this has been a good time for me creatively.
Sure, sure.
But I think for a lot of people, it's not, and it's like a really anxious time. And I would just say, if you're not feeling as creative as usual, I think that's fine. And we should be like really kind and nice to ourselves right now, because the world is like crashing down around us. And I also think, like, I'm a naturally pretty introverted person, as I feel that like a lot of creatives sometimes are. And I found myself kind of being like, oh, well, I don't have any like kind of things on the books to go out and see people. But I actually think that forcing myself to do that is really important. And I feel like I want to keep trying to do that in virtual ways and make sure I'm still reaching out to people and talking to them and kind of sharing and commiserating and everything. So I would just, I think for some introverts such as myself, it's easy to kind of just like disappear into yourself, especially when the situation is conducive to that as it is right now. But I would just challenge myself and others to still reach out to each other and keep talking and everything, because I think it's really important and it's how we're gonna all get through this together.
And how are your bangs?
I mean, I think I'm good for like another couple weeks, but then all bets are off. I just, to the listeners out there, I decided to, you know, change my entire look about 2 weeks ago, right before the like stay-at-home order was instituted, which was, looking back, like not a great idea, because I now have bangs to maintain and no knowledge of how to do that. I reached out to my stepmom, who has bangs and like cuts them herself, to ask for her advice, and she just said like baby steps, and I don't know what that means. It's not helping me. I guess I should probably buy a pair of scissors from Amazon and then just watch a lot of tutorial videos. I guess that's my plan of attack.
Well, I guess at the very least, I think coming out of this, whether it's another week or two or whether it's a month or two, I think a lot of people are going to come out with not the best hairstyles, I think. Either they're going to have really,
yeah,
really shaggy people,
right,
or people with like patchy hair, like pieces are missing where they shouldn't be. I think it's going to be I think it's going to be fairly interesting to see people coming out of this. And I feel really bad for a lot of the hairdressers and barbers, because I'm sure they work, you know, on, they don't work on salary. They work on, you know, basically on a per client basis. But on the other end, I'm sure as soon as this ends, hopefully they get through okay. As soon as this ends, they're going to have a tremendous amount of business, because everyone's going to need a haircut right away. So,
oh, for sure. Everyone's going to look crazy.
Right.
They're going to need to get makeovers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really concerned about that as well, because my hairstylist is like my muse and kind of my therapist, and I just need her to be okay. So I will be going back to her as soon as it's allowed, for sure.
And there's also a couple, I want to get your take, because you're funny and entertaining, witty, one might say, Twitterer person / Twitterer. What's your take on the whole Imagine video? I still haven't seen it yet. I talked with someone about it. I don't remember who. I think it was Jay Holtham about it. But what's your take on it? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have. I'm gonna be honest, like a few of those people in that video I have never seen in my entire life. So I either like live under a rock or they were really reaching with their talent. I don't know, I feel like the intent and emotion behind doing it was good. I mean, of course it's I found myself getting a little frustrated with like, okay, well this is nice, but like you have the financial capacity to probably do more, but they may be doing that. Like I may not know about some of the kind of stuff that they're doing to support relief efforts and everything. I guess I also just felt a little like my mom is a pediatrician and she's like on the front lines, and to see, I don't know, that versus like celebrities filming themselves, I was a little disappointed by it. But I've also seen people on Twitter being like, shut up, like they're doing something nice, just like take it and like be happy. So I totally see that as well. So yeah, I guess I don't really have a hot take, just a lot of mixed emotions.
Vanessa Hudgens, Gabriella.
Oh God, Gabriella, no. Yikes. That's a yikes from me. That's a strong yikes.
I don't think that needs to be elaborated on too much.
Yeah. I just feel like Gabriella, that character, would never have said that. And that's kind of what upsets me most as a huge High School Musical fan. Like, Gabriella would have known, she would have been like volunteering and shit, you know? She wouldn't be saying that. So I just feel like Vanessa needs to be a little bit more method, I guess.
Look to your inner Gabriella, everybody. Everybody.
Seriously, I know I do almost every day. Like, how did she get Zac Efron? I don't know, but I want it.
And then I want to ask, because you had a tweet which I think is sort of relevant for many people, not everybody, but many people, in that how realistic it is, or how are you able to physically be in the same, sharing the same space with someone for as much time as you are, and how do you logistically, psychologically make that work when you have, a significant other or a roommate or somebody that's just in your space all the time, which is a different problem than some people who may be listening who are live alone. But for those who are listening who have somebody else that is, they feel breathing down their neck every second because they're just, I'm not trapped in here with you, you're trapped in here with me kind of thing.
Definitely. I mean, I think it's I feel like we've kind of gotten into a good routine where, because both my boyfriend and I need to be, you know, like on video or phone calls throughout the day. So we're fortunate enough to be able to be in different rooms because a couple of our roommates have kind of actually like gone back home. So the living room is usually like somewhat free. So he's usually out there and I'm in here conferencing. So we kind of spend like a good portion of the day apart still. So I feel really lucky that we have enough rooms to do that. But I really think the main thing, honestly, because we are pretty good at like staying independent and like giving each other space throughout the day. But I think one thing that I want to be mindful of is like kind of still making sure that we're making time to like spend quote unquote like quality time together, like making sure I don't just assume like, oh, well, I saw you all day kind of in and out, so like we don't have to hang out tonight, or you know, like I still want to kind of watch shows with him and make sure we're spending time together, especially because we can't like, you know, go out to eat, or that's kind of our schedules. Well, really my schedule is so busy that I really appreciate, you know, like carving out that time to like go out to dinner once every few weeks to just like kind of connect and catch up. And so I feel like we're going to need to find like new ways to do that.
Especially now that you've run out of Love is Blind to watch, right?
Exactly. You know, like he won't watch that with me. So that was a solo activity. That's what I'm talking about. I'm just cutting him out. I'm like, if you don't want to watch this, then I'm doing it by myself. Yeah. But yeah, I think it has a lot to do with like how much space you have, and yeah, I feel like it's gonna be potentially bad for people, but just be patient with each other.
Yeah, I think that's a good sort of lesson. Just in general, I know a lot of like people going out to the store, you have to stand in line because they're only letting 25 people in or something and at a time. And so you have to wait half hour to an hour just to get in the store, and the store is mostly empty. And you know, just being patient with the people who
Yeah.
work there, and you know, the delivery people, and just everybody in general that we're dealing with, because it's tough all around, and there people are doing the best they can, I think. So, what?
Totally. I really do think that people are doing their best. Like, just I was standing in this huge grocery line. I guess my grocery store is not letting only a few people in at a time because there were definitely more than 25 of us, but it was like this weird kind of like moment of solidarity where you could just tell everyone was like scared and like this sucks, but we're kind of all in it together, staying as far apart as we can. So that was like weirdly moving to me in a way.
No, I'm there with you. Thank you
Yeah.
for talking with us, Captain M Dud. Follow Emma on Twitter at Captain M Dud. You will not be disappointed. So yeah, thanks, and say hello to your boyfriend and apologize for me bringing up the watering can and all that stuff. You brought it up first,
Not
so
at all.
I cannot take full
Yeah,
blame for that.
I feel like he's gonna just be excited to have it out there. You know what I mean? Like I feel like this could be the start of like the solution to the toilet paper crisis. So we're gonna take full credit for that.
Yeah, and
Thank you for giving me a platform.
I'm certainly not saying he's wrong. I just, you know, people have been using toilet paper, and if there's a run on toilet paper and he
Yeah.
doesn't use any, how does this magic work? And so, yeah, I know that's great.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great having you on. And to all of you listening, remember, you're not alone. We're all in this together, as Captain M Dud has said. Stay safe. Be well, and actually, I'm taking tomorrow off Sunday to spend with the family, but we'll see you again on Monday. So we'll see you next time.